You can't say that. Traitor. Traitor.
She's still sleepy.
Are you not well, honorable member?
When are you paying the money?
Hey.
You are not allowed to be emotional.
Take your seat.
Draw the lela pili.
Nkanja.
That's unparliamentary.
Good day and welcome to our fourth installment of Sunday Times Politics Weekly. I'm Amil Amrao. I'm joined in the studio this week by veteran journalists Ranjani Munsami and Kwanita Hunter. These guys are laughing. So humble. We've got a massive week this week with so much happening in politics around the country. You've got the state capture inquiry that's off to another big start this week with the banks coming in and giving their testimonies. You've got a lot of politics in the DA, which is coming to the fore, with Musi Maimane now wanting to run for premier in the Western Cape. And then you've got the COSATU Congress going on as well. And a lot of talk around Ramaphosa's opening address to that Congress and some things he said about that secret plot that Kwanita reported on, where Ace Magashule and other Zuma-aligned members, and in quotation marks, met at a secret meeting at the Maroni Hotel in Durban. Let's start with the state capture. Ranjani, you and I have just come out of the first bit of today's state capture hearing. We heard some testimony from FNB. And very similar to what was it yesterday?
Standard Bank.
Yesterday, what Standard Bank had said yesterday about these meetings that they were called to by members of the ANC and members of the IMC.
Yes, Amil, you know, I think that every week we think we know all there is to know about state capture, and then we're caught by surprise by the revelations at the state capture inquiry. And I think that is the reason why South Africa is so engaged with this inquiry. It's because it is full of surprises. There is information coming to the fore that we never knew about. And I think this week's bombshell revelations was the interference of the ANC in the bank's decision to close the Gupta accounts in 2016. So on Monday, we heard the former head of compliance at Standard Bank, Ian Stinton, talking about the decision to close their accounts and what prompted it, and then the reaction to the closure of the accounts. On Tuesday, we saw a similar process where the former CEO of First Rand, Johan Berger, talking about the process undertaken by First Rand to close the Gupta accounts. Now, what is common between the testimonies of these two people is that the reason that informed the decision, and which is that, firstly, the negative media reports about the Gupta family and the Gupta entities, and secondly, that they were monitoring suspicious activity on the accounts. Now, they saying that they are regulated by strict rules that govern the banking industry, but there's also international norms. So, you know, once they pick up this kind of suspicious activity, they immediately terminate the accounts. But what was highly unusual was that after they then sent notices to Oak Bay informing them about the termination of the accounts, they then got the request for meetings from the African National Congress, and then they were then summoned by what was then called the Interministerial Committee set up by Cabinet. So these two processes were highly unusual for these bankers, particularly I think the meeting with the ANC.
I see Mr. Berger came out today and said that in the 32 years that he's been within the banking industry, it's the first time he's ever got a request from a meeting from a political party. And I think just the names that are coming up as well, we saw, I mean, during the whole state capture scenario, we saw certain names which came up who were implicated. And now you're seeing other people who you thought would be on the other side of the whole thing, people like Wede Mantashe and Enoch Godongwana. Now their names are coming up on the fore. And this is worrying because the ANC keeps saying that they're not on trial in this commission, but it seems like they are the ones who are on trial.
Yes, Kanita, you'd know that, I mean, Jessie Duarte's name, for example, has come up regularly in terms of her siding with the Guptas. But you remember from the Vatukluf landing that Gwede Mantashe, that was 2013. And Gwede Mantashe took a very strong stance against the Guptas then. But now in 2016, significantly, post the Nene reshuffle, You see Gwede Mantashe summoning the banks on behalf of the Guptas to find out why their accounts are closed. And this is a massive surprise.
So I recall, you know, 2 years ago, 2016, when we were reporting on Mosibenzi Zwane and Mildred Oliphant and, you know, this IMC that they wanted to change roles. You'd recall that there was a press conference, and Mantashe said they met with the Guptas, and they said it was not unusual because they also met with the banks, and they downplayed it at the time. And I remember we tried very hard to get them to explain, why would you be meeting with the banks? And it really was downplayed. And I think that looking at the banks' testimony, it was it really, really confirmed suspicions that it was highly irregular, and it was just bizarre, actually, that a political party is getting involved in personal, you know, matters of individual clients. And so, for me, what was most astonishing is people who kept their fingers out of this, or kind of, you know, tried to stay on the periphery of the debate and the discussions around state capture, are going to be implicated, if not by their direct participation, but their complicity in being in meetings where certain things were discussed, and like, you know, in this case, sending SMSs. And
I think that there's two significant things that have come out from the banker's testimony. The one is that the meeting is called at Lituli House. So any attempt by the ANC to distance themselves or distance the organization from state capture is now behind us, because the ANC is now implicated as an organization. The second significant thing is that, according to Ian Sinton from Standard Bank, Nazim Hawa from Ogbe informed Standard Bank that he had asked the ANC to intervene on their behalf. Now, that is very damning, because we need an explanation from the ANC as to why would you take an instruction from Ogbe to meet with the banks? Is there any other company that the ANC has ever intervened on when they have been in this kind of trouble? Because I doubt they would be. I think the ANC would struggle to explain that. And I think for Gwede Mantashe in particular, you know, he made a statement during Fakey Mentor's evidence, saying that evidence is fake. So he commented outside the ambit of this inquiry, declaring a witness of the commission to have provided fake evidence.
Who was speaking under oath, really.
Who was speaking under oath. But he is not willing, he has so far not indicated any willingness to come and explain his role. And now I think there's serious questions about his role.
So Ranjini, you know, you've been obviously writing a lot of analysis on this and giving, you know, coverage, minute by minute coverage of the commission's hearings since it started. Have you been criticized for, you know, analyzing the commission? And I mean, what has been the kind of response from the party when you're making analysis on the commission?
Well, look, the thing about the ANC is that there is not a position on it, and just like the plot meeting, the Maharani plot meeting, there's not a single position, because you had Pule Mabe say one thing, Makhashule say one, and Zizi Kodwa say one thing. Now, similarly, with the reaction to the State Capture Commission, you have different people reacting in different ways. But I think the one person who has tried to be principled, I would say the president as well as Zizi Kodwa, the head of the presidency, have been principled in saying, you know, people must come forward and testify, even if they're amongst us. But I think that the heat is on now. And you see Zizi Kodwa surprisingly tweeting, saying that this media analysis is not helping. And, you know, he has made contact with some journalists to say that you ought not to be doing this. Let the commission run on its own. Now, the commission is set down for 2 years.
Exactly. How are we then supposed to wait 2 years before we actually comment on this?
And that's never happened before, where people are asked to hold off on analysis and commentary until the end of a process. I mean, from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission through the Marikana inquiry, the arms deal, people
just court have cases, really.
Court cases, yeah. Yes. There's always been. So it is. I think this is a reflection of the pressure on the ANC in this particular matter.
Do you think that people have realized the seriousness of these hearings, like, only midway?
I think that the ANC, there's certainly a realization in the organization now that that the skeletons are falling out all the time.
Yeah, the skeletons.
And that it is difficult to dodge culpability anymore. And certainly there are indications that the commission is certainly saying to the ANC, you need to start preparing to come because you're going to have to answer some questions. But certainly in terms of the senior leadership in the ANC. The former president, Jacob Zuma, has been invited by Judge Zondo to respond to the allegations against him. And now you've seen two NEC members, Mosobenzi Zwane and Mildred Oliphant, because of their role in the Interministerial Committee, they are going to have to respond. But I think that because of this role that's taken on by Gwede Mantashe and Jesse Duarte in terms of the interventions, it's very likely that the ANC secretariat or former secretariat is going to have to answer questions. And I think that's going to be really devastating for the ANC. From what I understand, they might not want to respond straight away because they're anticipating that there's going to be a lot more skeletons. But the longer they let it ride, the more difficult it's going to be. Oh, the one person I forgot is Enoch Godongwana. I mean, we've had this incredible testimony from First National Bank about him sending "please call me" or, you know, messages to "please call me." And, you know, you would not have expected that from a person like Enoch Godongwana. But I think that this commission is going to continue to surprise us.
Of course. So let's move on very quickly from the ANC. There's a lot we can talk about, state capture. We could go on that for hours and hours. But let's move on to the DA. Some trouble seemingly brewing in the party now after some media reports which stated that DA President Musi Maimane is looking to take on for the premiership in the Western Cape. Obviously, we know that the Western Cape is sort of the biggest DA power base, where they've held power and where it seems that they never will lose power in the Western Cape. And all their premiers there have sort of been successful. Politically, as a strategic move, Juanita, what do you make of the move for Musi to sit as Premier of the Western Cape?
So I laughed firstly when the Sunday Times report came out to say that Musi Maimane has nominated himself for the position of Western Cape Premier candidate. Now, the Western Cape, or rather the DA, has three provinces that they've earmarked for winning in the election. So they already have the Western Cape. They want to obviously retain the Western Cape. Mm. They want to win Gauteng, and they also want to win the Northern Cape. Mm. And we know that in the previous elections, in the 2014 elections, Musi Maimane was the Gauteng premier candidate. So now the DA issues these, you know, processes that you could fill in a form if you want to be a candidate, go through a whole lot of processes, submit your CV, appear before a panel. It's now down to two candidates, Alan Winde, who's an MEC in the Western Cape, and Bongi Nkosi Madikizela, who is the DA leader in the Western Cape. And everyone suspecting that it's going to be Bongi Nkosi Madikizela because of the role he played in terms of the Patricia de Lille saga, etc. And then suddenly, Musi Maimane decides, oh, hang on, I can put my hat in the race. And by law in the DA constitution, the federal leader can decide for himself wherever he wants to be deployed, which I think is quite bizarre. And so that decision by Musi Maimane really, really angered a lot of people in the DA, which is why they didn't announce their candidate on Sunday as they were planning to do so. And we saw Bongi Nkosi Madikizela coming out now and saying that it's extremely strange that he would leave in a race or being the DA's presidential candidate to run in a province the DA is not seriously under threat, because according to their own analysis, the ANC's prospects in the Western Cape is zero to none. And so it's quite fascinating, number one. Number two, it raises two questions. Firstly, who is going to be the DA's presidential candidate for the 2019 elections?
And hopefully not Helen Zille.
Well, I was going to say, are we going to have Bapela or Pelera too?
So let's move away from the ANC and get on to the other big story that's now just broken as we're sitting in this podcast, is that Musi Maimane, the DA leader, has declined a candidacy or is his fight for the premiership candidate in the Western Cape. There was quite a long process that led up to this. We saw media reports at the weekend saying that he was vying for the position, and now all of a sudden he takes that back. Kwenisa, what do you make of that?
So Musi Maimane has now informed the federal executive of the DA that he's now decided to decline the request for him to stand as the DA's candidate premier for the Western Cape. Now, it's interesting because he's kind of shaping it as if he was asked to stand by his supporters, and now he's declined it. And he says this was a request that required careful consideration and consultation with relevant party structures, which made the initial request to him. So obviously the DA is not going to say who requested him to stand. But if you recall the Sunday Times story this past weekend, where it said that Musi Maimane nominated himself for the position of Western Cape premier candidate, because the rules in the DA allows the federal leader to decide wherever he wants to be deployed. And we know that there was a lot of anger and a bit of, frustration over that decision. Musi Maimane called the DA Western Cape leader Bonginkosi Madikizela into a meeting and told him about this, and he was really hoping to get that position. Now, he spoke on the record, which is quite interesting, where he said that it's quite strange for the federal leader to decide to run in a province with his national profile, etc., that the DA has already clinched. And it was funny when I saw a cartoon, I think there's a Mangena cartoon, that basically shows Cyril Ramaphosa and Julius Malema, even Bantu Holomisa, running towards the 2019 presidential race, and then Musi Maimane running in the opposite direction, saying, "I want to fill Helen Zille's shoes."
but I may be mistaken here, but is it not unusual? It's not unusual for the party leader to run for premier as well, wasn't?
Well, he's basically following in the footsteps of Helen Zille, because while she was a party leader, she then decided to run for the premiership of the Western Cape, and then first Lindiwe Mazibuko was then the leader of the opposition in the National Assembly, and then you saw Musi Maimane then taking on that role. So I think he wants to follow suit, because I think that whoever advised him decided that this was the best way possible for the ANC to maintain, the Democratic Alliance to maintain its power base. But I think that the way that the DA has gone about this process has been completely mind-blowing. Firstly, we are not yet in an election cycle. So I don't know why they are announcing these premier candidates so early. What I assume they are doing is they're trying to eliminate the jockeying for positions and the competition internally, so that they can get people to close ranks and strengthen the elections machinery once we do get into elections phase. But what it's doing is that it's taking any sense of excitement out of the DA. Okay. I mean, the DA has problems already holding people's attention. And now, it has these boring candidates, some of them people have never heard of, and that have no chance of winning the provinces that they are standing in. And it's also causing disillusionment amongst other strong candidates who don't make the cut. So I think that the DA continues to shoot itself in the foot in the way it does a lot of things. And I think that speaks to the lack of maturity in the party, and that too many people are trying to pull and push and think that they know South Africa better. But I think you need to have some element of political savvy and a maturity, and also continuously read the political environment before you do silly things like this.
And, Ranjana, you raise a very important point, because it's almost as if, why are you doing this? It doesn't make any sense as to why would you, preemptively shoot yourself in the foot. It's one thing when you're caught off guard and then things are a bit chaotic. But also, the way the DA has run campaigns in the past have always been very clinical, very data-driven, analytical. I think the political scene is changing so much that doesn't work anymore. So it's going to be interesting to see whether their polls and their data and their, you know, reviews of these candidates, whether it actually sort of materializes. I saw Solim Simanga, was it last week, you know, going on to this hearing sort of tour in the Johannesburg CBD, and you know, he was trying to engage, and the media was there with you know, people in the streets, and you know, a guy just swore at him and just told him to get lost, and I mean, the guy was drunk at 7 o'clock in the morning, but I mean, it was hilarious for people watching the video. Mm-hmm. But for me, it sort of sent a political message that maybe these candidates are perfect in paper.
Yes,
Solim Simanga may be a perfect candidate in paper. But, I mean, did they really, really put him up against a David Makura, perhaps? I mean, it could not be David Makura, but, you know, and say, what will his popularity be in relation to an ANC candidate or an EFF candidate?
Okay. So moving on from the DA very quickly, the COSATU Congress is going on this week, where the Trade Union Federation is going to be making a decision on its new leader. Sudumo Dlamini. Wow, a lot can be said about his leadership of COSATU and what's happened to the organization in under him, but now we see some new blood emerging. Any thoughts on how this will end?
Okay, so COSATU has been on a decline, on the face of it, in terms of its membership. It's lost 300,000 members since its last Congress, but also its political voice is diminished. It doesn't have the kind of leverage that it used to have on the national scene, and it's been, I think, because of its internal dynamics and because it hasn't been able to keep a pace with what is happening in the country. But I think Sudumo Dlamini and his posture, his relationship with former President Jacob Zuma, the issues that he, you know, that he has spoken on, has lessened COSATU's voice. And I think that's why the time has come where you see that there's kind of a rebellion from the affiliates. So the new president of COSATU is now Zingi Siyalosi. She, you would remember, stood as the candidate for deputy secretary general at the ANC's NASREC conference, and she is perceived to be closer to President Cyril Ramaphosa. Now, I think that COSATU needs to regain its political leverage. So, in that regard, it makes sense for them to have somebody who is perceived to be closer to the current president rather than the former president. But also that, you know, there's the issue of moving a pace with the time. So, you know, having a woman leader, having a younger blood. So, I think it's that mix that ensured that she is elected. But more than that, I think that, you know, I think that COSATU is not keeping up with the trends in the country. Certainly not on the shop floor, but also on the political scene. And I think that will be the big test in terms of what comes out. But I think that for now, President Ramaphosa has stolen the show, and not on labor issues, not on political issues, but rather in the way he ambushed his comrades in the ANC about Kanita, your. Now legendary story about the Maharani plot.
So it was quite interesting because we've always seen Ramaphosa being very cautious, Ranjani, in the way he dealt with things, and you know, sometimes it's almost frustrating, as if he speaks around issues and not facing issues head on. And yesterday it was quite surprising to see him really tackling this issue, speaking about not an alleged plot, about a plot, speaking about people who are disuniting the organization, and talking about, you know, the importance of unity. He was really, really fiery in his address. And if you just look at the reaction of Ace Magashule, because Sunday Times reported 2 weeks ago that Ace Magashule was part of a meeting with former President Jacob Zuma, in trying to come up with a fight back plan to Cyril Ramaphosa's presidency, which includes either going to court to challenge the outcomes of the NASREC conference, filling the list process of the ANC with ANC comrades who are anti-Ramaphosa, and also supporting a certain candidate for the ANC Youth League presidency. So that was definitely factional. That was definitely an effort to undermine him as president, and to sort of fight back against some of the efforts that he's been making. People in the last week's edition of the Sunday Times were a lot more brazen about it, saying they've been under attack and etc. And so that's why it was quite interesting to see his tone in responding. And it was very, very fierce, and it almost as if he was not mincing his words. And it was quite hilarious that every time he spoke about, you know, this plot and this uniting the ANC, people in the COSATU Congress started screaming "Ace" in reference to Ace Magashule, who sat there at that conference and just stared,
staring at the table and his phone. Okay, guys, thank you so much, ladies, for joining me this week. Is there anything that our listeners should look out for throughout the rest of the week? I know the state capture inquiry is still ongoing. We'll be hearing more from the banks this week. The COSATU Congress will come to a close. I know, Cornita, you were talking about the National Working Committee meeting happening next week, Monday.
So it took place yesterday, but I think they're going to continue next week, Monday, okay, with discussions around Ace Magashule and that Maharani meeting.
Well, I think the real fun and games is going to be at the end of this month when the National Executive Committee meets. And they will have to respond to everything that's come out in the past 2 weeks. And I think that is going to be something to behold.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for joining us this week. And we'll catch you next time on the Sunday Times Politics Weekly.